This is episode 349, dated Friday, March 1st, 2024.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another edition of In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. This is episode 349, dated Friday, March 1st, 2024. Before we continue with our festivities, let me introduce our good friend and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, how are you?
Recovered from a bug, but the weather here is its typical late February, March, which means rain, thunder, maybe some snow tonight, lots of wind, rough surf, but spring is coming.
Yep, I think so. Let's hope for the best. Over here in the Northeast, it's cold, it's partly sunny, but a warm-up is inevitable. I would like at this time to thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be aired. We start out with our media outlets. Thank you very much for airing us when you do. And that includes ACB Media 5, and I'll give up my email address in a couple of minutes for those people who get the stream. In case they're not on my mailing list, they won't necessarily know my email address for comments about our show. I want to thank Raymond Gay, our producer, for what he does for us, as well as Tom and Lynn from Rosie's Place Chatline. They post our shows on their chat boards, and we appreciate that very, very much. Also, I would like to thank Jacqueline Sylvia, my website designer from JS Web Solutions. She archives In Perspective on my website. All you have to do to find archive programs is go to www.brancoevents.com. Go there, arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts, click on them, and you will see most of our archives from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
I also want to thank Trish at this time for being our host and Chanel for streaming us live on ACB Media. And I also want to say hi to a faithful listener who has sent in some comments about our program. I want to thank Becky Frankieberger. And she is a loyal sports fan. She lives on the West Coast also, Peter, not too far from you. I think she lives up in the Seattle area.
Okay.
Thank you, Becky, for listening to our show. A lot of us, when we talk amongst ourselves, especially among the blind, we talk about Social Security, SSI, SSDI, and anything else related that involves financial subsidy and qualifications and all that that we have to deal with on a regular basis. So I thought I would bring in Jesse Shirek. He's a government affairs specialist with the National Federation of the Blind. He's very knowledgeable in these fields, and he also deals with other topics, and we may have time to get to those later on in the program. But without further ado, let me welcome Jesse to our show. Jesse, welcome to In Perspective. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today.
Hey, thank you. And I really appreciate the opportunity to talk about this subject. It's something that I, as a blind person, have had to deal with myself and can be very confusing to a lot of people. So really appreciate the opportunity to talk about it and help educate.
And the rules change all the time too, Jesse. That's mm-hmm. another reason why we have to keep up.
Yeah, the rules do change. They do change a fair amount. Some of the calculations about the benefit amounts that you receive with SSI and SSDI change. And some of the rules we're trying to change, which, you know, potentially we could talk about that a little bit later if you want to as well.
Okay, well, I have an opening question. And it's something that I thought about because recently I heard about an SSI reform bill. Now, maybe I'm saying it wrong. But there seems to be some movement about reforming the guidelines for SSI. First of all, am I correct in my assumption?
You know, there's a number of reform bills that are out there right now. One is called SSA 2100, which contains a good number of components. It has everything but the kitchen sink in it, so it's unlikely to go very far currently. It has a lot of support from, it's a very Democrat centered bill. So since it doesn't have bipartisan support, it's not likely to go very far. but it's a good place to look for some of the items that we may want to have changed as blind people. There's a number of other bills out there that are very important. I've seen SSI reform bills. There was one that is supposed to eliminate there's a penalty essentially for married couples receiving SSI.
Yes.
And this would eliminate that penalty and the resource limits. Yes.
I think they should. They set the bar way too low, in my opinion, for that.
Yes.
As far as income guideline, it's way too low.
It's way too low. Yeah. And we'll go through some of what those income and resource guidelines are. I mean, essentially, if you are a person receiving SSI, you can only have $2,000 in resources, meaning, you know, items you've purchased or that you still have money you have left over from previous months. And as a married couple, if you both receive SSI, you can only have $3,000 in resources. So it's really, it's not very realistic, but that you'd be able to save up enough money on SSI in order to be able to have a safety net so that if you go to work, you've got a savings built up that's going to protect you. So definitely resources are way too low, and we do support that bill that was sponsored by Senator Sherrod Brown in Ohio. So we definitely support that.
Jesse, there, maybe it's the bill you just talked about, but it was my understanding there is another bill out there that has some bipartisan support that maybe may not go as far with SSI, but there seems to be some interest in the Republican Party about reforming this, you know, for a lot of different mm-hmm. reasons, including the fact, as I understand it, that there's such a, to use the word cliff, mm-hmm. where people are trying to, you know, get to work, that, you know, they're afraid of losing benefits. And so they're trying to find ways to sort of make the cliff less steep.
Yeah.
Is there another bill that's more bipartisan that or maybe there isn't?
Well, there's a bill, you know, there's a number of bills. There's one that we're working on here at the National Federation of the Blind that hasn't been introduced yet. It's called the Blind Americans Return to Work Act. It does seem to have a lot of support in across the aisle. And this is a Social Security disability bill. In order to talk about it, I'm going to have to use a lot of terms that are inherent to Social Security disability. I'm wondering, would you like to explain those terms as we go along?
Yes. Or? Yeah. Go ahead and do that.
Okay.
I think that makes sense.
So let me start off by saying that in order to qualify for Social Security disability insurance, a person needs to have worked and paid into the system. So you think about buying life insurance, right? You have to pay for your life insurance, you know, once a month. And, you know, if or when you passed, your family benefits from it, right? Well, with Social Security disability, you pay in to the Social Security Trust Fund each month. And so you need 6 quarters as a minimum, depending upon age. So a 27-year-old who's legally blind would need 6 quarters of coverage, meaning that they would have needed to earn $1,730 in a quarter in order to be able to earn a quarter of coverage. But you can earn more than one quarter of coverage by earning enough money. You don't have to work for an entire year to earn 4 quarters of coverage. So there may be people out there that are qualified for Social Security disability who don't even know that they're qualified. You also have to be expected to be blind for at least 12 months. You have to have an eye test to qualify as legally blind. In Social Security, it's called statutorily blind. Basically, it's the standard definition of legal blindness that a lot of us are accustomed to. You have to have a central field of less than 20 degrees, meaning that you can only see 20 degrees versus being able to see essentially ear to ear as a person with normal eyesight. Or you have to have a visual acuity of 20 over 200 in the better eye with best correction, or worse, meaning that you're legally blind. So if you meet those guidelines, you've paid in your quarters of coverage and you apply, and then you have to see, we would recommend that you see a board certified ophthalmologist. And what you would need from that board certified ophthalmologist are several things. You're going to need documentation that has the date on it, that has the doctor's name and information, that has your diagnosis, that has the onset date, which is really important. The date that you physically became legally blind. It's important to have that onset date. The tests that were performed. So if they use, say, what's called a Snellen test, that standard eye chart that we're all very familiar with the big E at the top of it, or a visual field test, which essentially tests how much peripheral vision you have. So you'd have to talk about which test results were used to obtain the diagnosis, and then the results of those test results. So if you have 5 degrees of visual field or 15 degrees of visual field, and then if it's your central vision, what your central visual acuity is. So once you have all of those things collected, you send those off to the Social Security Administration and you wait. A lot of blind people are rejected the first time. So we encourage blind people to reapply for Social Security disability. So after a person has...
Hey, Jesse.
Yes.
Before we go on, I fear that we may be, and you may be doing what or not. There are two different programs. There's SSDI, which you've been talking about.
Yeah.
And that's important. And then there's SSI.
Yes.
Which is a different kind of program.
Correct.
And the reason I'm interrupting you is because we had started talking about SSI and it seems that we've sort of veered into SSDI. So I guess my question is what you've been saying relevant to both programs?
No.
Okay.
No, they're two separate programs. So we really should talk about them separately.
Okay.
Which is the way I would advise to do it.
That's fine. But we've started with SSI.
Programs.
That's why I.
Sure.
So I don't, not quite sure how to best to proceed, but I just want people to understand that there are two different programs.
Sure. And I think the reason that happened is we started talking about the earnings cliff, which is actually a Social Security disability earnings bill. So
fair enough.
It really doesn't apply much to SSI.
Okay.
So we could start in either area.
No, keep going. Keep going. That's my bad, not yours. Keep going.
Okay. All right. So we talked about how to apply for Social Security disability. Once you've applied, you may be rejected. Please reapply. You know, sometimes you have 60 days to appeal once you've applied initially. Please reapply. And as long as you have, you know, a solid eye report from a board certified ophthalmologist, you know, if you run into problems, you know, we would encourage you to, you know, to contact a Social Security expert for assistance, especially if you're being denied more than once. It's really important to get that help. So once a person has entered the Social Security disability system, it takes 5 months after you've put in your application and been accepted. It'd probably be 6 months before you get your first check. And what's interesting about Social Security disability insurance is that it's based upon your work history. So everybody receives a different amount of earnings. The average amount is not quite $15,000 or $1,500. $1,500 a month is approximately the national average for Social Security disability insurance, SSDI. SSDI also has some rules that allow you to go to work. Some of them, you know, work really well, and some of them are a little challenging. The issue is that if you're on social SSDI for blind people, there's something called substantial gainful activity. And basically what substantial gainful activity, or you'll hear people refer to it as SGA. SGA is essentially the cutoff. So it's an amount of money that you can earn each month. And if you earn less than SGA, you get to keep your benefits. If you earn over SGA, you essentially lose your benefits. There's different rules for blind people, but SGA for blind people in 2024 is $2,590 a month. So you can earn up to that amount, but not over that amount. And there's some work incentives to help a person who's blind go to work. So there's something called the trial work period, which is 9 months within a 60-month period of time where you can try working. Within those 9 months, you could earn $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 in a month and not lose your Social Security disability benefits. And those 9 months, each of those 9 months is triggered when you earn $1,110. So what we see in the blind community is a person might go to work. Maybe they're working part time. Maybe they're just earning slightly over that. Maybe they're earning $1,200 a month. So they've used up their 9 month trial work period before they ever get anywhere close to SGA, that 2590 number, 2590. So by the time a person has hit that SGA number, sometimes they don't understand the rules that you need to go by with Social Security disability insurance. And what winds up happening is people continue working when really they shouldn't qualify, and you wind up with a gigantic overpayment. I get phone calls from people that, you know, they owe $40,000 to the Social Security Administration or $60,000, or I've even heard of people owing, you know, over $100,000 to the Social Security Administration. So, you know, my message is that it's really important to understand the rules if you're making use of this benefit.
I'm surprised that debt is allowed to go that far. Aren't they informed the minute it happens?
You would wish that was the case. You know, but unfortunately, you know, currently we have to report our income, and, you know, eventually it will catch up. So, you know, as you pay taxes, eventually the Social Security Administration will catch up, but oftentimes it can take 2 or 3 years. So what I would say to somebody is that if you are on SSDI and you start working over SGA, you know, write to the Social Security Administration and let them know that you don't qualify for Social Security disability insurance anymore and you want your payments to stop. They may not stop your payments. So it's really vitally important to take that money that you get each month and put it into a savings account so that when the Social Security Administration comes to collect that money, that you have it to give back to them.
Kathy, I have a question about this 5-year period. You talked about a 9 month of sort of grace period over a 5-year period.
Yeah.
What happens if you try to work, I'm going to make this number up, in 2014 for 9 months, and for whatever reason doesn't work. And now it's 2024. Does that 9 month period start up again now that the 5-year period has expired?
It would start over. So you
do get another.
Yes.
It's not a once in a lifetime thing.
No.
It's a once in a, okay.
No. It's a revolving 60-month cycle. So after you've used up your 9th month and you've not worked for 5 years, as you were saying, it would reset itself and you would be given another chance to work. One of the things that we're trying to do with the Blind Americans Return to Work Act is that we're trying to, instead of a person, we call it falling off the earnings cliff. If you get to that $2,590 number, we don't want you to fall off the cliff and lose your benefits. And we see a lot of blind people who are, you know, parking alongside the cliff. So essentially they're limiting the amount of time that they're working. They're refusing wages. They might not even take a job because it's over that SGA number. So we want to find a way to incentivize people to continue working and continue growing in their career fields without the fear of having their benefits stripped away.
I've heard some intimidation in the past from one or two blind people, and it's a shame because I know that organizations such as yours and ACB and blind people in general who advocate for themselves, we want to work.
Yes.
And when I hear a blind person say, I want to work, but I'm afraid to because I might lose my benefits, that goes against what we want.
It does. It does. And there's clear statistics that show this. The National Industries for the Blind did a survey in 2018, and they found that 21% of the blind people that work for them have denied a raise or a promotion. And 37% of their members, you know, have asked for disability days and other mechanisms to scale back their work.
That's a terrible sacrifice to make.
It is. And it affects you in the long run. Say you do lose your benefits. So it's okay. Say you lose your benefits, or say you stay on your benefits and you don't increase your wages. That's going to affect you when you retire, because right. retirement is the same thing. It's what you pay in is what you get out of it. So, you know, we really need to incentivize people going back to work. And we do have a plan for this. We want to see, rather than that cutoff, that hard cutoff, we want to see a 2-for-1 phase out. So for every $2 over SGA that you earn, your benefits are only reduced by $1, so that you can gently and easily kind of scale your way down from that earnings cliff and, you know, be fully employed and not worry about losing your benefits. Your benefits will phase off as you work more and more, and you won't need to rely on your benefits any longer.
See, this makes a lot of sense, obviously. The problem I can see with it is a bureaucratic one. If Social Security is having such a hard time catching people, you know, who not through no fault of their own are buying the rule, it takes them 3 years to figure it out. I can just imagine what would happen if they had this new procedure, which makes a whole lot of sense to me, trying to make sense of that.
I think there would have to be some sort of reporting, some annual reporting that you do if you're working over SGA. I mean, you have to report annually anyway.
Right.
So, you know, you could do it on an annual basis, and it's just something that would have to be enforced. So we're suggesting a 10-year pilot program to do this. And we think it'll be really effective. I mean, that's how, I don't want to spoil our conversation about SSI, but.
Right.
That's sort of how SSI works. For every $2 you earn, you give $1 back of your benefits. I mean, there's more to it than that. One thing that we should touch on quickly, just so that we don't forget about this with SSDI, is that there are some things that you can do there's essentially what they call impairment-related work expenses. And so if you are earning over SGA, you still might be able to keep your disability benefits, your SSDI. You can deduct certain types of transportation. So if you have to take paratransit, or if you have to take an Uber to work, you can't deduct like a fixed route bus. Or if your spouse has a car, you may not be able to deduct that, but you can deduct, you know, specialized transportation. You can deduct guide dog expenses. If you need to purchase your own assistive technology, you can deduct that. So there are ways to earn a little bit over SGA and still keep your benefits.
And how does an ABLE account impact all this?
Yeah, ABLE accounts, I would say they benefit SSI recipients more than Social Security disability recipients, SSDI recipients. Yeah. Should we talk about a little bit about SSI before we talk about ABLE accounts?
Since I've made the transition for you a second time, this time before. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, you're good at this. I appreciate it. It helps. So SSI. So the way that SSI works is SSI is intended for people with low incomes, low resources, seniors, people over the age of 65, people who are disabled, or people who are blind. So in order to receive SSI as a blind person, you have to be, they call it statutorily blind, but, you know, legally blind. You have to have resources lower than the limit. So the resource limit for a single individual is $2,000 in the bank or in possessions. The resource limit for an individual married couple would be $3,000. And essentially everybody who receives SSI receives the same monthly benefit amount. They receive $900. You can tell it's a Friday. $943 a month is what SSI recipients receive. There are states that pay more, a little bit more than that. Not a whole lot more. You know, New York State gives an additional $87 a month to SSI recipients. Utah gives $3 and change extra to SSI recipients.
Well, look, so what allows these states to be flexible?
It's a law that they've passed to give additional income to SSI recipients. It's because of the cost of living in the state. So, you know, states like New York have a much higher cost of living, and they've determined that $943 isn't enough. You know, you get that extra $87.
So let's go back to the original premise that Bob talked about with the SSI, which is the marriage penalty. And so, by the way, I really appreciate this. This is the best summary I've heard about this in my entire life. So thank you for this.
Yeah.
So are there bills in Congress? Cause everybody who I've talked to understands this marriage penalty makes no sense. Whether, you know, cause it makes marriage less valuable. We all want to support marriage for a lot of complicated reasons.
Makes people want to cohabitate more and more because the government don't seem to care if you cohabitate.
Well, and there are societal benefits to marriage. You know, the research, whether it's from the left or right, says this. So my question to you, Jesse, is, you know, are there bills in place that have somewhat chance of passing that might, you know, eliminate or reduce this marriage penalty piece?
Well, it's hard to say if they have a chance of passing or not. There's one that was introduced in the Senate, which by Sherrod Brown, he's on the Finance Committee. And he's the chair of the Social Security subcommittee of the Finance Committee. So he has a bill. I'm drawing a blank on what it's called, but it essentially would raise the resource limit. Please don't quote me on this, but I believe it raises the resource limit for individuals to $10,000 and for married couples to $20,000. So, you know, that bill is out there. I don't know how well it's received in the House or if it's been introduced in the House. You know, we've kind of put our focus on other Social Security efforts. We do support his bill. We think it would be really great if it did pass. This is something that would really benefit people.
And it would benefit a certain class of people, as it were, right? Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I'm becoming more aware of in the blindness community is we tend to, and again, this is a tendency. I'm not saying this is always the case. We tend to support people who are better off. And it seems to me that we should be, you know, trying to reach out to those people, which there are plenty, who aren't doing as well as we are. And this bill strikes me as a really good bill that we as a community should get behind. I don't know the details of the bill, but that the concept strikes me as a really good one.
Yeah, I think it's a really solid concept. You know, there are some other bills out there also that are unrelated to the marriage penalty, but are related to Social Security disability that I think are important as well. Like there's one called We Can't Wait, which would allow a person to essentially take a slightly lower benefit amount if they were, but you wouldn't have to wait the 5 months to get your Social Security disability check. And again, that's SSDI, not SSI.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I agree with you. I think that we do, like I said, we do support this particular bill that you've referenced that would raise the resource limit amount, but also eliminate the marriage penalty.
I mean, if you did nothing else but that, I think that'll be a major improvement. I realize, and the reason I'm harping on this in part is because I think there's a chance for some cross aisle support because, you know, the Republicans do talk about the value of marriage. And they do support about the value of work. And it seems to me this is a bill that, you know, might really make a difference, you know, for both sides, as it were.
Sure. Sure.
So, Bob, how are we doing for time?
It's almost that time to bring our audience into our discussion. So Jesse, you may be hearing from other people who are just as concerned about these topics and would like to ask you questions. And so what I'd like to do is remind everybody that you're listening to In Perspective. I'm Bob Branco, and my co-host is Peter Alchil, and we're talking to Jesse Chirek, who is a government affairs specialist with the National Federation of the Blind. So without further ado, let me ask Tricia if there are any hands raised. Tricia, do we have any?
Yes, we do. The first one is Charlie Vera. Go ahead.
Charlie, welcome to the program.
Hello, everybody. Hello,
hi,
hello,
Charlie.
Hello. My question is, what is the difference of SSI and SSDI?
Sure.
That's the question.
What is the difference of SSI and SSDI?
Okay, sorry, I just didn't get it.
Okay, so the difference between SSI and SSDI is that SSI is for people who are blind or qualify through a disability, or people who are 65 and older and have, and don't have a lot of resources, don't have a lot of money, don't have a lot of money in the bank. SSDI is meant for people who have worked for a period of time. Think about somebody who's maybe worked for 10 or 20 years and gone blind. Might be more likely to qualify for SSDI, if that makes sense.
Okay. Thank you so much, guys.
You're welcome, Charlie. Okay. Who do we have next, Tricia?
Next, we have Teresa.
Hello, Teresa.
Hey, Teresa.
Okay, I have two questions, actually, not quite related. Okay, first of all, talking about the marriage penalty for people who get married that are on SSI, what if, in the event, two people got married and they entered a baby into the picture, you know, they had a baby, how would that affect their benefit? And then my other question is not quite related, but there's another component. I've known of people who have found out that they could get more than SSI would give them if they were to draw off the Social Security of a deceased parent. But yet they definitely would face a penalty if they were to get married. They'd lose that. And I'm wondering if something is going to be done to deal with that, because there's a lot of cohabitation that goes on out there because, you know, they know they'd lose their benefits.
Yeah. I think in terms of what would happen if you were to draw your Social Security disability income off of a deceased parent, you would essentially receive their benefits. So then you'd go under the rules of SSI in terms of how it works when you earn both SSI and SSDI. And so with SSI, there's some rules that we didn't really get into, but I'll try to make it essentially your first $85 of income aren't counted. For every dollar you earn over that $85, you divide that in two. So let's say that you earn $1,085. You subtract the $85 off the top, divide by two, which gives you $500, right? Then you subtract your SSI benefit amount, which would be $943, which would leave you with $443 of SSI benefits and $500 of income. So it kind of cancels out in that circumstance.
Okay.
Well, no, I take that back. You'd lose $500 of your wages. So you'd keep your $943 plus you'd have $500 of that $1,085, if that makes sense. Yeah. So you'd still be ahead. You'd wind up with $1,443. Hopefully my math is right there.
Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. If that makes sense.
Okay. So now to my first question.
Yeah. The first question is,
So the first question would be, you'd have to find out what the Social Security Administration would give you.
Yeah.
Additionally, if you were a blind couple with a blind child or with a child. So, you know, you'd have to kind of check with the Social Security Administration about that. I don't know the answer to that off of the top of my head. I could certainly look it up for you and get back to you with that information.
You wouldn't want a small child to starve because their parents are drawing SSI, and it's not their fault that, you know, why their parents can or cannot work, and it's not that child's fault.
Right. And I appreciate you bringing that question forward, because that's the first time I've heard that question.
That's
helpful.
Right.
Makes sense.
I mean, I know there are other resources out there for couples, you know, like the WIC program and other things that little children can qualify for, parents of little children can get for them, I should say.
That's a good question. I'd never thought about that. Thank you for that, Teresa.
Okay. You're welcome.
Thank you for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Teresa. Trisha, before
you're
we
welcome.
Before we continue, I just want to ask Trisha if there are any other hands raised.
Yes, there are. We have area code 575970 is next.
Okay. I don't recognize the phone number, so just identify yourself.
Yes, this is Beth from Beth. New Mexico. I'm using someone else's phone. Sorry about that. My question is kind of related to Teresa's question. Like, if two people are getting SSI, or one person is getting SSI because he's not really blind, and one person is getting, say, survivor's benefits, which kind of equals to SSDI, I suppose, off of a deceased parent, but they still can't get married, right? Because you lose that income.
Well, they could get married, but if the money that they have in the bank is greater than the resource limit, which would be $3,000 for a married couple, then that person would lose their SSI benefits. There is one way around that we might want to talk about ABLE accounts at this point, because there is a way
that.
Of, okay.
Yeah, let's do that.
So ABLE account.
That $10,000 bill does pass though. I think that would be great.
Yes.
So go ahead. So talk about ABLE, because
ABLE accounts are important because we know that resources can be counted against you if you receive SSI. So what ABLE accounts allow you to do, in order to qualify for an ABLE account, currently you have to have become blind before age 26. We don't like that. It's much too low, but it is what it is. And the reason that it's 26 is because, you know, we originally wanted a higher number. We wanted a higher age of blindness onset, but the score made it look like it would cost too much for the federal government. So currently you have to be 26, or your blindness has to have started before age 26. So if you qualify for an ABLE account, ABLE accounts exist in many states. You don't have to pick an ABLE account in your state. You know, it's really good to actually go and shop around with the different ABLE accounts. But what an ABLE account does is it's an account that you can deposit money into after taxes are taken out of the money, but it's not counted against your resources. So as a blind person on SSI, you can have $100,000 in an ABLE account and not have that counted against you. Whereas as a single blind person, you can only have $2,000 in your checking account before your SSI is taken away. So it's really a great tool for saving money if you receive SSI. And there was a law passed in the last session of Congress in 117th session of Congress that raises the age of onset to 46, meaning that if you became blind before the age 46, you can qualify for an ABLE account. That law doesn't go into effect, unfortunately, until January 1st of 2026. But when that happens, many more people will be able to take advantage of ABLE accounts.
I wonder why it takes so long for these laws to go into effect.
Yeah, we wonder the same thing. It really takes a long time for this particular law anyway. I'm not sure. It's really unfortunate.
My guess is that it has something to do with bureaucratic inertia. It just takes them a while to make the changes necessary to make this work. I mean,
that's a good answer.
Cynical response, but I think bureaucracies are just so incredibly slow at making change.
Yeah.
And it's really unfortunate.
It really is. And, you know, when it does go into effect, we're certainly going to push for no age restrictions on ABLE accounts. You know, there really shouldn't be an age restriction, but to lift it to a higher number, you know, that particular law is going to have a cost associated with it. And so sometimes people are unwilling to pass a law that has too much cost.
So I want to make sure that you said something. I want to make sure that this is correct, that I got it correctly. For SSDI, ABLE accounts have very little value.
I would say very little effect.
Effect, right.
Because you don't have resource limits with ABLE accounts. Correct. So for instance, if you were to deposit money into an ABLE account, it's still going to be counted as income. I don't want to say that ABLE accounts aren't useful to blind people, but they're not going to help a person on SSDI keep their benefits. Mm-hmm. There are tax incentives in some states where you can actually get a tax credit if you do put money into an ABLE account. So I think they can be a valuable tool. The nice thing too is that money that you put into an ABLE account, it grows tax free.
Mm-hmm.
And when you take that money out, you don't have to pay taxes on it. So there are advantages to ABLE accounts for all disabled people.
It's kind of like an IRA account, right? Or a Roth IRA,
kind of.
Whatever those things are called. It has the same sort of feel to it, to me.
Yeah. Yeah. You're given investment options depending on your state. You have depending on the state you choose, there's different investment options. So your money can be invested very conservative, or it can be invested into a fund that's going to help it grow. Much like you were saying, an IRA, I think that's a great comparison.
Yeah. Oregon, where I live, has four different accounts, and, from sort of conservative to moderately conservative to quite aggressive.
Mm.
So, that's that. So I'm sorry, I distracted. We have other hands up?
Yes, they do. Let's do it. Lynn Schneider is next.
Hello, Lynn.
Hello. I have, I guess, one question and then one really quick question. We'll start with I'm on SSDI and my mom just died, and in the will, the house will be sold and the proceeds divided. And so we will each get a portion of the house proceeds. And my sister and I, several of us are hoping to stay in the house. My question is, would that sort of income be considered something I need to worry about for my SSDI?
No.
Okay. Yeah, no, I didn't think so, but
it's only earned income.
Okay. And then I have a real quick and dirty question before I hang up. When is Social Security going broke?
A lot of us want to know that.
Sorry about that. I hate to be the
no, that's actually here, but... interesting question.
It is an interesting question.
Hearing that it's going to be in 10 years, 20 years, whatever. And I'm like,
Lynn, with all the money that's spent in this country right now, it's a good question.
It's a very good question.
So Jesse, what are you hearing, and what is your organization, NFB, doing to sort of address those issues? I guess it's an interesting question.
Oh, of the Social Security Administration?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that one of the things that we're doing, our primary concern is blind people. So we work on behalf of all blind people in the United States. And so one thing that we're doing, I did talk a little bit about the Blind Americans Return to Work Act earlier. So that has the possibility to get more people collecting SSDI benefits off of the Social Security disability system, which would lower the cost to Social Security disability. And I think this has a real opportunity to take traction. It does seem to be liked by a lot of the lawmakers in Congress on both sides of the aisle. And we believe that seeing those numbers of people who are working hard to avoid the earnings cliff, they're scaling back their future potential and staying on full Social Security disability benefits. So if we could give people the confidence to work more and grow their careers, we have the opportunity to lower the cost to the Social Security Trust Fund. So that's kind of how I would talk about that if I were with a member of Congress, because, otherwise people are going to continue to stay just below the SGA level, which does increase with the cost of living. Yeah. But really, you know, your future potential is not going to grow. So those people are going to be on SSDI until they turn 67 when it turns into Social Security retirement.
Right. Right. Yeah. But I, you know, there's so much talk out there, especially from the conservative side of things, that mm-hmm. the Social Security is in some danger of not being able to do what it's programmed to do. And how that's going to get resolved, I think, may be a huge issue in the next two or three years.
Yeah, absolutely.
We in the disability community and the blind community need to pay attention to. I know you guys will. I'm not saying you won't, but mm-hmm. it strikes me as an issue that we need to at least have in the back of our minds.
Well, I agree with you, and I think that's why it's so important to have some of these laws that are important to our community in mind, because there will eventually be Social Security disability reform mm-hmm. and Social Security retirement reform. So when there's a law that's being addressed, a major Social Security law, if some of these smaller laws that affect blind people haven't been passed, they have a good chance of passing when this reform takes place.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so in order to be in the conversation, I mean, I would encourage everybody who's listening to this to reach out to your members of Congress. Call them, tell them about the problems that you're having with SSI and SSDI. Bring it to their attention, because if they don't know it's an issue, they, you know, it can't be resolved.
So and frankly, I'm going to get a soapbox for 10 seconds. I wish both organizations would take this issue more seriously than they are. I think this is it's, and I'm not saying the issues that we don't talk about aren't important, because they are, but I think this is an issue that cuts across all strata of the blindness community and the disability community. And I really do wish that we would take this whole issue much more seriously as advocacy groups that advocate for blind people. I think it's a big deal.
I concur.
Yeah, we have to protect our benefits, and we have to make sure that, you know, our benefits are delivered equitably.
Yeah.
Lynn, thank you. Tricia?
Yeah.
We actually have two more hands. Let's go with Nora.
Oh, okay. Thank you for telling us. Go ahead.
Nora?
Hello, Nora.
Huh? Hello. I mean, that's a lot of hanging up with you. I have never, I mean, I've worked at a very, very, very short time at a sheltered workshop for the blind. And I never, one time I got $100 for that trip for 1 week, and all the other time, much lower amount of money per week, because I pay piecework. I used to get paid piecework for whatever was assembling in the assembly line. And back then I was with SSI, and then when my father retired from his job and doing some kind of transporting people to and from the airport, and I became eligible for SDI because of my disability, and my parents are still alive and they're in their 80s, and because of that, I was able to qualify for SSEI because of my father's retirement. And I never paid taxes because I never had enough money to do that. And I never had a sensible, tough job to work at. And I only worked in children's workshops, and that was pretty much it. So that's my comment right there. And I never got a regular job outside of that. So my take is slightly different, but not only blindness, but I have hearing issues and things like that. So that's pretty much it.
So did you go blind before, like at some point in life, or were you born blind?
I was born legally blind. Yeah, okay. I was born that way.
Okay.
And I was here at SSI, but I never paid taxes because I never had enough money to do that.
Okay.
To be paid. So that's pretty much it. So that's the reason. That's the reason I never paid taxes, because I'm always on low income.
Thank you so much for your comments. Yeah.
Thank you, Nora. Before we continue, I promise that I will give out my email address, which I forgot to do at the beginning of the program for people who listen on ACB Media 5. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. That's bobbranco93@gmail.com. Just send us your questions or your comments about our show, what you think about it, and we'll be happy to read your emails. Okay, Trish, you said you had another hand raised.
Another one, yes. Deanna, go ahead.
Hello, Deanna.
Hey, Bob and Peter and Jesse. I got an email today. I'm a member of AAVL, which is the ACB affiliate for seniors with aging and vision loss, basically. Hmm. I'm currently at 75. I'm on SSA. Mm-hmm. But I did work most of my life. And what I was curious about was the email I received something to just get me to fill out a form and give them my contact info so they could ask for more money? It was being sent out by AARP because immediately when it said contact your legislators. So I did. And I filled in the form because they were saying there was a bill in Congress that is trying to take the funds from Social Security to pay down our national debt. Mm. And I'm going, that sounds kind of haywire, but this Congress has been kind of haywire. So
I agree with that.
So I went ahead and filled it out and I got an immediate response. If you want to help more, donate to our advocacy fund.
the question that this raises for me that Deanna asked is, because we get these notices all the time. You know, they're part of the scare tactics that these advocacy organizations send out. And how do you sort of distinguish the real from the fake, as it were?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I would think about the source of it. So if it was an email that was coming from AARP or yes. ACB or the National yeah. Federation of the Blind, I would actually go to their website, go to acb.org, go to nfb.org. I don't know. I imagine it's aarp.org, but I don't know. And try to take a look to see if you can find information about
that particular bill,
campaign.
It is.
Yeah. Yeah. Otherwise the other thing you can do.
Lots of things get up there on Capitol Hill and never move because they are too harebrained.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing you could also look on congress.gov mm-hmm. and if they give you the bill name, you can mm-hmm. search for that bill or the bill number. And what will happen is it'll tell you who the sponsor is and it'll tell you how much support it has.
Yeah.
But
where
you can
it
always,
is in the process.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yep.
Well, that old cartoon song about I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill.
Yeah.
No, that's a really good question, Deanna, because we all get this stuff. And
yeah.
It's, I just
deleted the request for funds for their advocacy fund.
Yeah.
But, I was just curious if it was a serious bill that actually is out there.
Well, it may actually be a bill in Congress, but
But if it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, exactly.
Then
yeah.
It's just a scare tactic. Thank
you. We have 1 minute, ladies and gentlemen, just to let you know. Deanna, thanks as always for your contribution. Trisha, do we have any hands raised?
We have time for a quickie. Yeah, we actually have one more hand. It's area code 619-684.
We have about 30 seconds for you, whoever you are.
Perfect. This is Ginny. I have a very, very brief comment. Okay. I heard on one of these community calls, someone identified themselves as a benefits counselor. And I thought, it would be nice if there is a job like that, if there's certificate training, because, sometimes it would be nice to sit down with somebody one-to-one and there are so many things that can affect your situation with your benefit. And I don't know if there is a certificate or a training program. It would be nice to have an official benefits counselor to turn to for some people, I think. And that's it.
I agree. This stuff is so confusing. And, just thinking about this program, I confused two programs, and I've been doing this stuff for a while. It's so easy to do. I think that would be If there isn't such a thing, there should be.
Yeah. If you're looking for benefits counseling, you know, I'd encourage you to reach out to your local vocational rehabilitation offices. A lot of times they can connect you with benefits counseling or your local independent living center.
Yep.
Jesse, I want to thank you so much for taking the time. We'd love to have you back on another episode. You provide us with a lot of very helpful information about Social Security, SSDI, SSI. And we can revisit these topics at some other point. We appreciate you very much. Thanks again for your time and your efforts. We appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I also want to thank everybody else. Next week, we're going to be featuring Dr. Timothy Cortez. He's a blind psychiatrist, so we should be hearing more about what he does next week on In Perspective. And go safe with God. It's abundant blessings. Have a great week, everybody.